I have not been to Jerusalem, but Shirley talks about the bombs. I have no God, but have seen the children praying for it to stop.
Colin Powell's speech is the latest installment in a large-scale and carefully orchestrated propaganda program.
If could, may, can, impossible. And any sense of using those phrases, I would not buy a car, I wouldn't beat my dog, let alone start a war.
It seems as though Iraq is relying on the fact that world opinion is against this war right now, and they don't appear to be taking the propaganda war all that seriously.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Thursday, February 6, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Reaction to Secretary of State Colin Powell's address yesterday to the United Nations Security Council ranges from laudable to laughable, depending on which newspapers you read. The Washington Post says, quote, he offered a powerful case that Saddam Hussein is cooperating with a branch of the al-Qaeda organization. The French newspaper Libération says Powell's long presentation convinced only those who were already convinced. Between a raft of circumstantial evidence and actual proof, there is enormous room for personal conviction. An editorial in the Los Angeles Times read, piling fact upon fact, photo upon photo, Powell methodically demonstrated why Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein remains dangerous to his own people, Iraq's neighbors, and potentially the Western world. And the German newspaper Die Welt read, in October 1962, then U.S. Secretary of State Adlai Stevenson presented photographs to the U.N. that showed Khrushchev had put nuclear rockets on Cuba. Colin Powell was unable to produce such conclusive facts. In other words, he was no Adlai Stevenson. But whether you deem Powell's presentation as convincing or lacking, it failed to budge world opinion. The four veto-bearing members of the Security Council stood by their earlier statements, with Britain supporting the U.S. position, France opposing it, and Russia and China urging for the inspectors to be given more time. Speaking through a translator, French Foreign Minister Dominique de Villepin's response was measured and stands in contrast to the assertions by the Secretary that Iraq has missed its last chance provided under Resolution 1441.
The inspections regime favored by Resolution 1441 must be strengthened since it has not been completely explored. The use of force can only be a final recourse. Why go to war if there still exists some unused space in Resolution 1441? Consistent with the logic of this resolution, we must move on to a new stage and further strengthen the inspections. Given the choice between military invention and an inspections regime that is inadequate because of a failure to cooperate on Iraq's part, we must choose the decisive reinforcement of the means of inspection. And this is today what France is proposing. For this, we need to define with Mr. Blix and with Dr. El Baradei the tools necessary to increase the operational capacity. Let us double, let us triple the number of inspectors. Let us open more regional offices. Let us go further than this. Could we not, for example, set up a specialized body to keep under surveillance these sites and areas that have already been inspected? Let us very significantly reinforce the capacity for monitoring, collecting information in Iraq. France is prepared to provide full support for this. It is ready to deploy observation aircraft of the Mirage 4 kind. Let us establish collectively a coordination center, an information processing center that will provide in real time and in a coordinated manner to Mr. Blix and Dr. Baradei all the intelligence resources that they may require. Let us list and rank in importance unresolved disarmament questions with the consent of the leaders of the inspection teams. Let us lay down a time frame that is strict and realistic in order to move forward in evaluating and eliminating problems. We need to have regular follow-up of progress made in the disarmament of Iraq. This enhanced regime of inspections and monitoring could usefully be supplemented by a permanent UN coordinator for the disarmament of Iraq, stationed in Iraq and working under the authority of Mr. Blix and Dr. El Baradei.
the opinion of France Foreign Minister Dominique de Villepin through a translator. Russian Minister for Affairs Igor Iganov through a translator stressed that diplomacy must be the means through which conflicts with Iraq are resolved. He further asserted that the inspections are working, and under Resolution 1441, the inspectors, quote, alone can recommend to the Security Council how much time they need to carry out the task entrusted to them, end quote. Iganov went on to call for cooperation by all nations.
The information that was given to us today definitely will require very serious and thorough study. Experts in our countries must immediately get down to analyzing it and drawing the appropriate conclusions from it. But the main point is that this information has to be immediately handed over for processing by UNMOVIC and the IAEA, including through direct on-site verification during the inspections in Iraq. Baghdad must give the inspectors answers to the questions that we have heard in the presentation given by the U.S. Secretary of State. At the same time, we must once again appeal to all states immediately to hand over to the international inspectors any information that can help them discharge their responsible mandate.
Jack Straw, Secretary of State and Foreign Affairs for Great Britain, characterized Powell's presentation as powerful and authoritative evidence that Iraq poses a very grave danger.
And the truth is, and we all know this, without that full and active cooperation, however strong the inspector's powers, however good the inspectors, inspections in a country as huge as Iraq could never be sure of finding all Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. Now, Mr. President, sadly, the inspector's reports last week and Secretary Powell's presentation today can leave us under no illusions about Saddam Hussein's response. Saddam Hussein holds United Nations Security Council Resolution 1441 in the same contempt as all previous resolutions in respect of Iraq. And let us reflect on what that means. That Saddam is defying every one of us, every nation here represented. He questions our resolve and is gambling that we will lose our nerve rather than enforce our will.
Jack Straw, Secretary of State for Great Britain. Syrian Representative Mikhail Wahebe read a letter from Farouk al-Sharad, Syrian Deputy Prime Minister for Foreign Affairs, urging all member states who have information on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction to turn them over to the International Atomic Energy Agency so that they may investigate the information and support the inspectors in their efforts. Al-Sharad asserted that any talk of war right now is premature.
It is no secret for us to say that Syria joined the consensus on the draft resolution after receiving guarantees and clarifications from permanent members in the Council that voting in favor of the resolution will mean seriously proceeding towards a peaceful settlement of Iraq's disarmament of all weapons of mass destruction and not using this resolution as a pretext to wage war against Iraq. The fact that some of the members of the Council are talking about the need to adopt a second resolution is, in our view, yet a second confirmation of such explanations and guarantees. Nevertheless, and 2 months after the adoption of this resolution and after the resumption of the inspections, and the fact that it has realized some reasonable progress that has not yet been met with any insurmountable obstacles, our region is at a grave crossroads, teetering between peace and war. Thinking that war could be one of the options before the Security Council is by itself a proof of our collective failure to implement peacefully Resolution 1441, while our Council, we believe, can still make a lot of effort to arrive at a peaceful solution to the Iraq question compatible with the authority and the mandate of the Security Council in preserving international peace and security. Syria also believes that the option of war is not only a proof of the failure by the Council to undertake its duties, but it is also a proof of the failure of the international system that should, in this stage, depend more than in any other time before on the Charter of the United Nations as a reference to bring peace to prevail all over the world. Syria, sir, still be.
Speaking through a translator, Mikhail Wahebe of Syria. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Colin Powell told senators today that within weeks, the Iraqi situation will be brought to a conclusion one way or another. Speaking to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Powell said a key to winning Security Council support will be this weekend's trip to Baghdad by Chief Weapons Inspector Mohammed al-Baradari and Hans Blix. Anticipating no surprises from U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell's presentation to the U.N. Security Council, Arab commentators dismissed his alleged new evidence of Iraq's wrongdoing. They were equally unimpressed by efforts being made by Arab leaders to grapple with the crisis. Raphael Kraft has more from Amman.
Be prepared. This is the title of the editorial of the Lebanon-based Daily Star newspaper. It gives the tone of the Arab press commentators' reaction to Colin Powell's presentation to the United Nations Security Council yesterday. Lomi Saduni, a Jordanian journalist and commentator teaching journalism at UC Berkeley, expresses this feeling.
The main message was that the U.S. is determined to invade Iraq regardless of the facts. As for the substance, the contents of his presentation, there wasn't nothing new. It's very alarming that a country like the U.S., with its vast intelligence, is ready to present a case without serious evidence in order to go to war.
Pan-Arab newspaper Al-Quds Al-Arabi editor Abdel Bari Atwan balks at Colin Powell's allegations that Iraq's secular regime is somehow linked to Al-Qaeda. In his editorial, he reminds the propositions made by Osama bin Laden to the Saudi kingdom in 1990 to help eject Iraqi forces from the Kuwaiti Emirate with Arab-Afghan fighters. Along with Al-Qaeda, Colin Powell also mentioned Hamas and Islamic Jihad in his address.
And the record of Saddam Hussein's cooperation with other Islamist terrorist organizations is clear. Hamas, for example, opened an office in Baghdad in 1999, and Iraq has hosted conferences attended by Palestine Islamic Jihad. These groups are at the forefront of sponsoring suicide attacks against Israel. Iraq and terrorism go back decades. Baghdad trains Palestine Liberation Front members in small arms and explosives. Saddam uses the Arab Liberation Front to funnel money to the families of Palestinian suicide bombers in order to prolong the intifada.
Lumi Saduni, referring to Colin Powell's address.
He is reinforcing Israeli claims, recent claims, that there is a Qaeda link in the West Bank and Gaza. By the way, the context, he referred to Hamas and the Islamic Jihad.
As Jamal Al-Tahat, a columnist from Al Rayy Jordan newspaper, explains, state-controlled newspapers in the Arab world didn't quote Colin Powell on the Palestinian issue.
The press who are really not against war, or they want to be objective, they avoid to mention this point in Powell's speech because they know the effect of this issue on the public opinion. If you accuse Saddam Hussein as a person who really support Hamas and Jihad, this will give him more public support. But the opposition press, they make it as slogans. Mr. Powell's mentioning this point, it seems as he defeats his purpose of providing evidences for Arab public opinion.
The impotency of Arab leaders to find diplomatic alternatives to the U.S.-led war option against Saddam Hussein found a large place in Arabic newspapers. While Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Saud says Arab countries must be given a chance to intervene with Baghdad, the Arab leaders seem stuck between the feelings of their people and their alliances with the United States. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Raphael Kraft in Amman.
Christopher Simpson is a professor of communications at American University, an author and longtime observer of political events in Washington. He's rather skeptical of two of the most serious charges made by Secretary Powell, that Iraq harbors weapons of mass destruction.
Colin Powell's speech is the latest installment in a large-scale and carefully orchestrated propaganda program. One of the most disturbing things about the Bush administration has been the extent to which it uses Joseph Goebbels-style big lie techniques to put across its program. I'll give you some examples. Substantially everybody who has looked at the question of whether or not Iraq has nuclear weapons agrees that they do not have a viable nuclear weapons program. And in this particular case, Exhibit A is always these aluminum tubes. Well, if you look at the actual specifications of these tubes, the tubes are designed for rockets. And these are rockets that Iraq is permitted under the agreement that ended the earlier Gulf War. The reason that the United States government and Bush's own father agreed to let Iraq have these missiles is that an entirely disarmed Iraq with no capability of defending itself from other powers in the region is much more destabilizing, much more dangerous in a certain sense than if the country has some minimum capability to defend itself. This particular type of tube is used for a short-range rocket. It's optimized for that. Its design is the standard design for that. Meanwhile, it is the case that other types of aluminum tubes are used in nuclear reactors, but they're a different type of aluminum tubes that are machined differently, they're a different size, and so on. So the conclusion that these particular aluminum tubes that the president and everybody else is talking about are actually for nuclear weapons would require the assumption that, number one, that Iraq was capable of this degree of nuclear manufacturing in the first place, which is highly questionable, and which the United Nations itself has denied. And second of all, that they would take these tubes that were designed for job A and remachine them and have them do a completely different job and a different size and so forth. Well, if that's really what they had in mind, frankly, they would have bought them in the right size. So that's an example of how big lie techniques and a fragment of truth is used to present a really quite deceptive presentation of what the dangers here are. I'll give you another example. Biological weapons are extremely dangerous, as are chemical weapons. But they're not mysterious in a certain sense. There's quite a bit that's known about them. How they work, the extent to which they're lethal, which types of biological weapons are most likely to be used, which are less likely to be used, and so on. The inspectors concluded that while it is possible that Iraq could have an underground or secret biological weapons program that would put these things to use, there was no evidence that they had that it did in fact. So it was left in the form of a question mark. And in fact, the question mark with a skew towards that it's less likely. Well, as we sit here today, the single most dangerous biological and chemical weapons capability in the world is in the hands of the United States. Bringing together the strains of anthrax germs that are the most deadly and nurturing a large number of them, and then fixing them together with certain types of dusts and powders that will disperse easily into a population is extremely difficult. Now, who has worked out how to weaponize this? The United States has. And the gist of what they've done, it's easy to say, but it's a lot harder to do, is to fix them with electrostatic energy like talcum powder. The anthrax that was used in these killings, these post office killings, was anthrax that almost certainly came from the U.S. Army's own biological weapons laboratories, not from a terrorist group, not from Iraq, not from Osama bin Laden, but the U.S. Army's own laboratories. And the most effective way to prevent the use of those germs as weapons of mass destruction is either to destroy the U.S. stockpile or, at a minimum, not let it out the door.
American University Professor of Communications Christopher Simpson. Thanks to independent producer Eddie Becker for that report. At Pacifica Station WPFW in Washington, listeners calling in to a local talk show in response to Secretary Powell's address to the UN Security Council were overwhelmingly opposed to his apparent conclusions on Iraq.
If we got rid of Saddam Hussein, would that make Al-Qaeda any less dangerous?
I listened to Mr. Powell, Colin Powell, make his presentation,
yeah.
And the words that I have problems with a lot of times, if, could, may, can, and possible, and any sense of using those phrases, I would not buy a car, I wouldn't beat my dog, let alone start a war. The other thing is the photos that he did, that the NSA and the CIA supplied, mm-hmm. The disinformation group, to show trucks, but I didn't get the tag numbers off the trucks, and I know they can do that in the district. The final
right.
thing is Saddam Hussein. I just want to tell him this is a case of fatal attraction coming back. But again, it's not a basis to launch war against other human beings.
I don't think that Colin Powell proved the intent, and the pictures that he was showing there. Even he said of those trucks, I guess removing whatever he couldn't even substantiate what they were moving in those trucks. Even the prime minister from Russia was stating that the UN only has the authority to act militarily against Iraq. So it proved a point where the United States is trying to be the enforcement officer for the UN, and I think the UN has to be very proper in telling the United States that they can police their own misdeeds that they see and they evaluate to be wrong from any other country. So
everybody's throwing this French word around, we. Everybody's saying, we need to do this, we need to do that. Ooh. That most of us are just calling in and looking at what we see on TV.
Uh-huh.
What's getting lost in this whole thing is the people, the babies, the mothers,
yes.
the brothers, the grandfathers, the old people
wow.
who are going to die once this administration decides to drop this massive load of bombs.
Wow.
That's why I brought up shock and awe. When you hear that phrase, you are hearing a country that has gone mad. When you hear that phrase used by our military, remember that means firestorm.
We have gone mad. And that's why I say, Terry, we don't need to answer any questions, who's right or wrong. The point is, we need to avoid this death that's getting ready to take place on innocent people. There may be a case against Saddam, but is there a case against the millions and millions of children and grandmothers and whatnot that are getting ready to die? When we make that decision to say, yes, we're going to take our anguish out, our frustration out on Saddam, we are saying the wrong thing.
One, there is a very clear connection and link between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda,
then?
And that's the CIA. If what Bush and Powell says is true, okay, let's give it to them. It's true. Mm-hmm. Are we going to start a war with a country that has weapons of mass destruction?
Mm-hmm.
There has
mm-hmm.
never been a war in the 20th century mm-hmm. between two such nations. Mutually assured destruction does mm-hmm. not necessarily mean high-tech weaponry.
If we've had all this proof mm-hmm. all of this time, why hasn't it been shown before? Why are they waiting until now to put this out if they've had all this before?
I was at a semi-public meeting the other night where a high British official with the UN categorically stated that the UN knows there's no connection between Al-Qaeda and Iraq.
Really?
Truly amazing. They brought the lemonade man out today, huh? He's supposed to be cool and refreshing. You know, Colin Powell is like the fox watching the chicken coop. He's been talking this crap about what the UN inspectors need to do and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, he comes out with all of these things. And you notice what was really critical. Everywhere the things of mass destruction was being housed, they don't even have access. You know, they don't have control of that.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, you know, where that camp, where the terrorists are. Well, he doesn't have control of that. Well, why didn't you go in there and knock them off? Shame. That they're willing to risk all those, they're killing them now, and they're willing to kill all the rest of them just to appease the military-industrial complex.
If you look in the
look geographically, Iraq, Afghanistan, take a straight line straight up to central eastern Asia. The Tigris and the Euphrates River, which are the big rivers up there, they get to control that water. And here's where the little sneaky part is. Control the water, you get Israel on the other end controlling the water. And who controls the water in that area controls the whole area. Three different reasons, so it's a win-win-win-win situation for them.
But what I found particularly disgusting today was what I interpreted as Powell's attack on the inspectors. He made a statement that Iraq is so good at hiding these weapons that we could not even expect that the most experienced inspectors would find them. Don't listen to common sense. Don't listen to the experts. Listen to us.
I think Powell made an unassailable argument. When you go count the number of times when he said that the claims made by the other side were simply not credible, you kind of just take away any possibility of the other side having any facts at all. As far as the Al-Qaeda connections and this particular person, and this looks like a leak or something in some connection they're trying to make, a very tenuous one. But I was thinking as he was talking about Al-Qaeda and this cell in Iraq, how very much similar that is to the cells in Germany and in France. And we are not going after Germany and France government heads because of the presence of Al-Qaeda in those countries. But the whole underlying thing is the idea of preemption. And that is the most dangerous policy, the most dangerous presumption that we have, and it creates a world of a warring world of people preempting other people.
I just had a comment about Colin Powell's reference to the Al-Qaeda connection. In the northern part of Iraq, the northern no-fly zone, the Kurdish people have had a kind of de facto independent state for the last 7 or 8 years. And so how can there be a chemical weapons plant in northeastern Iraq, which is Kurdish, and who are the American allies?
I think that it is a very confusing time, and that I think the most important value is that peace is good. If there's confusion, choose peace. I was sick to my stomach when I heard of the details of the shock and awe. Can't believe that would happen. And in such an ancient city as Baghdad, it really annoys me the way these politicians, you know, strategically mispronounce Saddam. You know, the Americans say Sodom. And they're going to make it into Sodom by raining down that fire.
Expressive listeners calling into the Dorothy Healy Show, co-hosted by Terry Kester on Pacific Station WPFW in the nation's capital. Peace Watch commentator Utah Phillips is frustrated by the media's march towards war, and he offers this creative response.
It's Saudi duty time. Stop that. Hey, want something positive you can do in your own life to work for peace? Take a little time out. Search around in your body, in your muscles, in your flesh for all of the sore points, all of the small pains, all of the tie-ups. Wad them up together. Shop around in your spirit. Shop around in your heart for all of your fears, your anxieties, your rages. Reach into your mind and take out all of those ugly, deformed images that are poured in day and night. And all of those exploitive sexual images that are used to sell products. Wad all of that up into one tight ball down in your middle. And in one final act of violence, pick up your television set and throw it out the front window. Then you can learn to live in peace with each other.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.